everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Drive-In Double Feature. I am one of your hosts, Aaron Lopez, and I am joined again by Ben Norsworthy. We got a really awesome episode coming up for you guys today. We've got a really special guest, a buddy from Ben's past. So we're looking forward to having a conversation with Mike Lair. I'm gonna let Ben kind of give the introduction here, but I'm excited for today's interview and conversation. So Ben, tell us about where you know Mike from, and give him that nice little teaser introduction.
Well, I met Mike back in college at Sinclair Community College in the theater department many, many years ago. I think the first thing we did together was The Front Page.
Yeah.
And we all had to learn how to smoke cigarettes.
So, yeah, really bad at that.
Yeah, but we did theater together at Sinclair, and that's where I knew Mike, and we all had the same kind of group of friends during that time period. And Mike went on to what we're going to discuss today, which is so far a pretty good career in the stunt and filmmaking business. Mike's credits include work on the John Wick movies, Logan, Westworld, Extraction, which is now on Netflix currently. I believe, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, it's one of the highest rated continuing films to be watched on Netflix.
Yeah, I believe it had like the highest cumulative views or something like that. There's a stat about it recently. We all started sharing it on Instagram, so I'm sure if you go to any of our pages, you see it. It's like one of the things. So we were blowing up for a little while there, but really, really good numbers. We're super stoked about that.
Yeah. It is. And like we were having a discussion last week where, thank God for streaming, to have this access to new films since the movies have been shut down. I mean, let's start there. Was Extraction always supposed to be a Netflix film, or was there?
Yeah. Extraction was always, we knew from the beginning that it was going to be on Netflix. And so we were, you know, it was kind of crazy because it was at this time when like streaming stuff was, it slowly just started to become the mainstream sort of thing. You know, it's much more common, I think, to binge watch stuff online as a TV show instead of, you know, tuning in every week to a network or something. And, you know, now that like Netflix original films and
not just Netflix, but also, you know, like you got like Hulu and Amazon Prime stuff, you know, it's like you're getting a lot more of like big features with like really sizable actors and bigger budgets, you know, coming out on those platforms. And what we didn't suspect was that it was going to happen to release. We knew it was going to happen in April. We didn't realize that it was going to be during, you know, obviously, you know, we had the big pandemic and the lockdown and everything. And so no doubt that sort of helped boost the views on Extraction. But I think a lot of people also said that it came at a really good time, if there is such a thing, you know, in given circumstances, but that everyone sort of wanted, you know, like, well, we can't go out and see a big budget, you know, blockbuster action movie and stuff and with an A-list star. And Extraction comes out at sort of the right time when people needed that, you know, that sort of a good popcorn movie, you know, something with a lot of explosions, you know, a lot of cool photography in it, and, you know, a really handsome star doing cool stuff. And yeah, we're stoked because it definitely made it a little more prevalent in terms of everyone's minds.
That's awesome. I'm kind of curious. So let's go back to the beginning. This is something when I told my wife that we were having you on, you know, and, you know, he does stunts and he's got a lot of cool shows under his belt. And she's like, how do you get involved with it? Like, do you go to school for stunts? We both, you know, just to let you know, as well as Ben doing theater, my wife and I have done theater for a very long time. So it's like, we've done little stunt falls, probably really badly in community theater. But you know, like, how do you get started in that? Like, what inspires you to get in, and then how do you get into the stunt world?
Yeah, that's a pretty common question, I think. And the crazy thing is that it sort of depends. Like, I don't think there's a great answer that covers a lot of, you know, bases in it. Everyone sort of comes to it from a different place. You know, everyone's journey into it is sort of different. You know, like I can only speak for myself personally, but you know, I went to, you know, to school with, you know, with Ben, and we got I got a theater degree in it, and then assumed that I was going to be an actor. You know, I wanted to really push that craft. And, you know, I did an internship down in Cincinnati with the Ensemble Theater of Cincinnati. And for that whole season, sort of really got in touch with that process. And I always respected and loved the craft. You know, we had some really great mentors and teachers, you know, when we were going to school. And I moved back to Southern California because I was originally from there before. I was living in the Midwest, actually. And when I went back, it was originally to pursue acting, you know, as the craft and, you know, as the career goes. But when I was
working in those, like, you know, just in the city, trying to get auditions, you know, trying to take classes and seminars and stuff and book roles. I started doing a lot of motion capture on some video games, and that was a really cool experience for me because it was this weird hybrid of, like, it was almost like theater. You know, you sort of, you hit your T pose and stuff, they start recording in the volume, and then the scene goes through, and at the end of it, you know, you have to hit your T pose again, they cut it. But for that entire time, it's not like you're really able to stop and start. They kind of have to go all the way through, get it done, and it's a scene. And it reminds me a lot of like black box theater, you know, like where you're just sort of surrounded on all sides by stuff you have to imagine and sort of envision it. And that was really fun for me. I thought that was really cool. But while I was doing that, you know, you tend to do a lot of stunt work as well. If you're very physical, you know, the motion capture demands a lot of physicality. And we got a lot of stunt people, like real stunt people. Like at the time, I was very much just an actor who, you know, had like done some fight scenes and kind of moved and did martial arts and stuff. But these guys were legit stunt people, guys who are in the industry still today. And I kind of, as I went through the next few years of doing jobs, I'd run into the same people, a lot of ones that I met on those mocap jobs. But then in general, like stunt people, you'd bump into a lot more when you would be doing action roles. You know, I'd be the villain's right hand man, and I'd have like one line, but then I'd have to like do a fight scene, and you know, you'd have like five guys who were all just throwing one punch, taking big falls, and going through stuff. And, you know, as an actor, you sort of don't run into the same people that often unless you're trying to collaborate with them. At least in my experience, I wasn't finding that a lot. But I would run into the same stunt people over and over again, and the kind of community that was there, the kind of family atmosphere of it, was what reminded me most of being in theater. What I really loved about just being in theater in general was that you sort of build a little family for a while, and you kind of all know each other within the community. And that's how stunts felt to me. So, you know, back in 2013, I was sort of juggling both careers at the same time, as like trying to really push both. But at around 2013, I said, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and commit full bore into stunts and really try to make that my career. And I thought there was more success for me there. And I was having much more fun just training those things and interacting with those people, you know, than I had been with the sort of acting community. Nothing against the acting community. You know, I still respect the craft a whole lot. And I still practice it from time to time. You know, I'll shoot shorts and I'll give myself dialogue just to make sure I don't, you know, look terrible saying a line on camera. But far and away, I've always had so much respect for the stunt community. And now my whole, path is to sort of do that justice and you know, push that craft forward in that realm.
Let's be honest here. I mean, you've been wanting to do this for a long time. I remember when we used to be in rehearsals together, and we, you know, Sinclair, if you've ever been in the Blair Hall Theater,
yeah,
they had the
12, I think.
Well, yeah. We used to, right when the steps that would go up to the stage, they had those walls there that had the kind of like those like pillars on there, and we'd be waiting for, we'd be on break, and Mike would just run and do a flip and run up the wall. And
oh yeah, it's like, yeah, okay. That was a maniac, but I mean, it was fun. I mean, it's just, you know, it felt like, you know, when you're a kid and you're playing make believe and you're just like, you know, imitating whatever it is, you know, it's like, oh cool, there's something I can run and jump off and climb up, and you're just kind of, you know, imitating uncool stuff. It's like, as an adult, the chance to do that is like, you don't want to sort of leave that behind, you know, you don't want to lose your sense of childhood, you know, spirit and stuff. So yeah, and theater, definitely we were, you know, that was our main job, was just to keep, you know, imagining and keeping our imagination powerful. You know, I found a lot of that through movement, you know, and I was surrounded by a lot of people who also did good stage combat stuff, and you know, who had that same kind of mentality of like, hey, if you know, your body is a big part of your instrument, if that's something that you really want to push forward, then like, you know, really hone that and really make that something that, you know, sets you apart and make it special. So yeah, well, man, that was crazy.
Since you brought it up, what is the key difference between stunt acting and acting, if there is such a thing?
Yeah, definitely. There actually used to be, when I first got back to Southern California in like 2007, it was sort of, I feel like things have changed since then, but originally, you could still feel it at that time, that there was a real clear delineation between stunts and acting, and you could not do both. And if you were an actor who said you did stunts, people were like, okay, you don't know what you are. And if you're a stunt person who's like, oh, but I haven't like acting experience, they're like, no, you don't. You're trying to be an actor, but you can't really do it. Nowadays, I think it's much more expected that if you're a stunt person, you should be able to perform, you know, to a degree. You know, you should be able to throw some dialogue down. You should be able to, you know, be able to play a basic objective and just, you know, be comfortable doing, you know, acting, I mean, stuff.
That makes you more versatile, right?
Yeah, and you're still, yeah, even if you're just thug number seven, like in the back row, you still have to play the world. You know, you still have to make those given circumstances real. You know, even just as like a nondescript stunt person, you know, an ND guy.
They don't just bring you guys in for like a single shot. You're there the whole time, correct?
Yeah,
for the most part.
Quite often, if you're one of those dudes who's like a henchman or something, you'll be sitting there watching the bad guy have a discussion with the good guy, and you're just hanging out, like, you know, maybe like with your hands folded, like on a gun or something, or you've got like a katana in your hand the whole, you know, just whatever it is. You know, if you get bored or you don't look like you're in the scene, people will notice. You know, it'll throw everything off and it'll look very weird. But yeah, I think it can also still get dangerous when people don't really take them very seriously too, because I think with a lot of, you know, to be an actor, I feel like this is one of the things that also drove me more into the stunt community, was I kept running into at auditions for like more action-y roles, a lot of actors who said they could do this or that, you know, they had these stunts, you know, they had this experience. And then you'd find out that a lot of it was like fabricated, or that they didn't have a clear perception of what was really expected of them. You know, it's, you know, they had taken the stage combat course, and so they knew how to fall down, but then, you know, someone might be saying, you know, but can you fall off of this dumpster onto this pad, you know, like 6 feet below, and then just not bang your head up. And then you got to do it like 20 times in a row sometimes, you know, and not hit the camera, not hit the other actors. And then they're like, oh, why is this so much more specific? And it's like, well, that's why there's, you know, two different jobs, you know. It's like, if, as a stunt person, you're also not going to tell them, okay, but then go and like dive deep into this monologue, go take a Suzuki technique for a week and then come back and then figure it out. You're like, I thought I was just the guy getting a bottle broken over his head. You know, there is sort of a delineation between the two, but I feel like it's, you know, you can't just necessarily say that you can do both, but there is some crossover within those things, you know. And I think especially nowadays, actors are expected to know a little bit more about how to do action, you know, post John Wick era. You know, we want to see the actors doing their own, you know, like action to a large degree, not necessarily stunts, but definitely doing like their, you know, their own movement stuff, fighting, punching, you know, kicking, stuff like that.
So since, let me ask you this then, in your opinion, which is a valid opinion, who's out there right now that you feel is an actor that could walk the walk, per se, you know? Does his name rhyme with Miano Leaves?
That would probably be the most people's example of it, because, you know, not only is he doing, you know, is Keanu doing a lot of his own, you know, action, is all his own fighting, and he's very upfront about it. He doesn't do the big stunts. You know, his stunt double, Jackson Spidell, takes all the big crazy hard hits. You know, he's got guys that are doing that for him, but Keanu really, you know, he pushes really hard in that training to make sure that he can do as much of the action as possible. He's really big on martial arts, really big on guns, and he's like legit really good at all that stuff. You know, rides motorcycles, can drive cars and stuff really well. And he takes it very seriously. You know, it's you can tell it in his demeanor that he has that dedication to it, which is what, you know, that's what pays off the most. And then you see it in the film, because, you know, the way that those movies are shot, it's very much like Westerns, you know, contemporary Westerns. They have these long, wide angle shots where, you know, they're not broken up with a lot of cuts. They're not trying to shake the camera. They're not shooting on a long lens and making it hard for you to tell who's in there, if it's double or not. It's very clearly a lot of the time that's Reeves. He's really doing it. And you know, if something goes wonky during the take, he's got to do it all again, you know. And I've had the chance to fight with him on a few times on camera. And he's, you know, we do long sequences and he's got to nail every beat. And we'll do like 10, 12, 15 takes sometimes, you know, if we're, you know, not nailing everything specifically, you know, or if he sees something that he doesn't necessarily, that he thinks he could do better, you know, he'll want to improve on that. And, you know, it does pay off. I think everyone can agree that, like, that's why he's like the man now. That's why he's like a pop culture phenomenon now, is that, you know, they all know him. He's John Wick, and that's why we love that movie series.
I always love that that clip that you post on social media. I think when the third one was getting ready to come out, you posted a clip of you guys just working out, like just going through the motions and coordinating, you know, and just kind of getting him trained.
Yeah, I went in on the second film, for the second
John Wick movie, I was brought in to sort of be one of his main training partners. Because I was like one of the taller guys, you know, who did a lot of like martial arts. And when we were working with him at the studio 8711, which is one of the biggest stunt fight teams in the industry, they created John Wick, you know, and their team leader, one of their team leaders, Chad Selsky, and the other one, David Leitch, you know, they're the ones who made John Wick, that cool character. You know, I was brought in to help train Keanu, and man, yeah, we grilled him like day in, day out. I mean, like, I was exhausted from the training. We'd be in there like 4 to 5 hours a day, just punching, kicking, doing judo, jujitsu, you know, all that sort of stuff. And he was in there the whole time, just going after it, you know, like we really didn't give him much of a break. And I think that's awesome, because he didn't necessarily want to take
you know, anything for granted. You know, he knew that whatever he did in the gym was going to show on camera, and so he took it really seriously. But
and he's in his 50s. In his 50s.
Yeah, man, I was exhausted. I'm in like my 30s, like dying every day in there. I was all like, oh man, this guy's a machine. He's a beast. You know, that's why he's the one. That's why he's John Wick. So.
Well, it's so kind of going off of that. So one thing I'm really curious about is, you know, you'd mentioned the 6 foot fall or the 6-story fall backwards and those kinds of like major stunts. You know, what would be in your mind, you know, go through your history. What is the craziest, just off the wall stunt that you would say, that you've done and one that maybe you kind of questioned doing, maybe there's a little bit of pause there.
Yeah, it's wild. I think when I think back about like all the stuff that I've done so far, everything has its own weird little version of it. And there's all sorts of funny stories about it. I think every stunt person has got a bajillion versions of these things. The one that I'm pretty proud of though, that I think was pretty awesome, but I suppose it isn't that crazy when I think about it, because it was all done very, very safely, was in Extraction in the very beginning of the movie. You see a dude in a red hoodie go down the stairs with Ray. Well, Rick's blindfolded and handcuffed, and the guy in the hoodie is me. I'm taking the stairfall going backwards down the stairs, you know, with Hemsworth's stunt double, Bobby Dazzler, and we're, man, that was crazy. I can't remember. We definitely did double digits takes of that. So we did it a bunch of them at the beginning of the day from down, looking up the stairs, coming towards camera, and then we did later in the day, we had to go up the top of the stairs, and we had to watch us going down the stairs. It was a bunch of falls. I remember the coordinator, Dan Stevens, you know, his only real direction was, you know, hey, you got to get some air. And I was like, okay. And so the job there is just, you're looking at the stairs and I'm at the top of the stairs and I'm facing the wrong way. I just jumped and just see how high I could get before I hit the ground. And yeah, it was gnarly, but you know, I mean, we did it a bunch of times and that was fine every single time. Like it was very safe. You know, the stairs were padded, you know, the walls were, you know, had some padding on them. And, you know, I'm working with a professional, the other, you know, my partner in that scene, Bobby, he's been doing this for such a long time. And, you know, even blind and handcuffed, he knew how to hit his marks, you know, perfectly. So it's, I guess, like, technically, it seems like it should have been a crazy thing. Like, I look back at it, I'm like, why is that not more wacky than it really is? And it was, you know, honestly, because we mitigate the risk of everything and we calculate it so much that it's as safe as possible. There's always going to be that element of danger and risk in a stunt. But you know, it's our job to whittle that down so we have as much of it under control as possible, you know, whether it's through our personal technique and, you know, how we're doing things and also like gaming the environments and changing the way that we shoot stuff so that it's done in the safest version possible. If I go back to my days when I was very first starting out, there's stuff that I didn't give pause to, but if I was to do it again, I'd be like, hey, that's probably not the way to do things. There's a clip online of me doing a wire gag. It's on my Instagram. And we had done it 5 times and it was going fine. It was a little bit complex, you know, but it was like a job that we were doing. God, I can't remember how much I got paid for that. It definitely was like maybe like $100 or something for like a 10-hour day, 12-hour day. It was just like, you know, just pennies. And I go up on a wire. I'm supposed to like be getting hit by like some invisible thing. I'm testing it out for someone else actually. And so it kicks me one way. I go up in the air. I get hit another way. I'm supposed to rotate and then get kicked another way. And I unfurl, like I do a twist out. We call it a wrap. When you got the wire going around your body and then they pull it and it makes you unfurl. And that wrap on the sixth one, the angle was just a little awkward. And I basically got yanked straight into a scorpion. So I went face first and my neck and back just shot over me. And it's not in the way that I skim like on like a rock on a pond. I just absorb all of the impact straight into the neck and back. And I came to like, I didn't realize what had happened. I sort of remember trying to give a thumbs up, which if you see the extended version of the video, which I can't really show you guys, but I'm trying to give a thumbs up and it looks like I'm just like doing this. And I'm trying to talk and it comes out kind of mushy. But in my head, I was being very cognizant, you know, cognitive about it. And then I kind of came to
20 minutes later, sitting in front of the medic at a table, and I had no idea what had happened. And he looked at me in the eyes and he was like, oh, you just kind of came back, didn't you? And I was like, how long ago did I do that gag? And he was like, about 20 minutes ago. I was like, I don't remember anything. And he was all like, I'm going to go get you some water. Stay here. Don't get up. You know? And I was all like, okay, that was crazy.
That's because you just gave yourself CTE with that.
Oh man, yeah, I'm waiting for the day that comes back to haunt me, where that's the only thing I see. and that's, again, that was you know, you try to whittle down the amount of risk as much as possible, but there's always, you know, there's always a chance that something can happen. That's why it's risk. You know, that's why it's never a sure deal. Yeah. That's why you get a stunt person to do that. You know.
You'd mentioned, so, and you know, if you don't have thoughts on this, you know, we don't have to talk on it, but you'd mentioned where your director, your stunt coordinator for Extraction had said, get more air. It made me think about, I don't know if you're probably familiar with Home Alone, because everybody watches the Home Alone movies, right? But I remember I was watching the documentary on Netflix, the Movies That Made Us, and they had an episode on that, and they talked about those stuntmen. They did things in that movie at that time that hadn't been done before. And they just put their bodies essentially on the line to get a good shot. And so I don't know if you're familiar with, you know, their techniques of kind of, I mean, and how that may have kind of evolved the form. Cause I know that they did things that, you know, they would do and you would look at and they're not just look real. They are. I mean, they're essentially,
falling.
Yeah, they're falling in a certain way so that it doesn't hurt as much, but it's still, you know, an effective fall. So, you know, I didn't know if you want to comment on that.
Yeah, definitely. I point that out as a movie where people all the time are, you know, when they think about stunts and, you know, they ask like, oh, you know, like what's like a gnarly stunt movie? I'll point to Home Alone a lot of the time, because that's one where, you know, it's also, if you think about it, a movie, sure, like John Wick or a Logan or something like that, where you have one guy taking out like 50, 60 guys, bad guys throughout the movie, maybe more, you know, those guys are all running in, they're taking a big hit, they're falling down, you know, and that's amazing. There's a lot of stunts going into that. You know, you have all these, you know, car chases and motorcycle things and whatever. But a movie like Home Alone, you have a very minimal cast. Like all of the action is three characters. It's Kevin McAllister. He doesn't really do any kind of stunts. And then you have the, you know, you have the two robbers that are just eating it every single show. Once it goes down, once you try to make the home, it's nonstop just chaos for those guys. And their doubles went incredibly hard. When I watched that movie, I think about how much, because that informed a lot of what I tend to think about as like shooting movies really well for stunts. You know, it's a lot of it is done in pieces, but a lot of it, because it's comedy, you have to show it sort of, you know, what's funny is you kind of just see this, you know, a shot of like, oh, there's a blank frame, you hear a voice out of frame, and then a body just drops and impacts the ground. And it's hilarious, you know, as a viewer, as a stunt person,
that is a very hard hit, you know, and yeah, props to those guys, because that's, those movies are also just nonstop stunts. And it's not necessarily just like the way in which you're doing stunts, but it can be the repetition of it that adds up as well. And back then they weren't as, you know, I feel like nowadays we're much more stringent about taking time to set up the safety aspects of it. You know, we'll put a lot more pads down. We'll put like, you know, a lot of wires to help like kind of descend us or decelerate us, you know, in the middle of things. And a lot of the guys back then, they just went hard. You know, they were just tough, and they could put on maybe like a back pad or something, and then they would just have to go for it. You know, there's not too much you can do in those situations, because, you know, what's funny is that they just take big hits, you know. That's, to me, fantastic. I mean, those guys no doubt got a lot of money off of that, and I, you know, they deserve every penny of it, because, you know, that's those are the days when dudes were really trading like their body in for the paycheck, you know.
Yeah, and how cool is that I mean, we're talking, you know, Logan, you know, Extraction, all these major action movies, John Wick, and then we talk about Home Alone. And, you know, and those are the stunts that in the end, you know, you don't think of it. And I love that you say that, you know, when you say a stunt movie, you know, it's not often that you think of a John Hughes, you know, comedy as a movie with a lot of stunts, you know, at least in that fashion. But that's cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Mike. Don't crucify me for saying this, but, you know, as I was listening to you talk, I was thinking about, well, it's almost like those days when they, like you said, put their bodies on the line and take the fall. It's like when we were kids and we used to like to watch the wrestling, and they took those chair shots. Yeah, we all know wrestling's fake, but they're still taking the chair shot because they're giving their bodies for the entertainment of others.
Yeah, definitely. I think pro wrestling, I've met and worked with a few guys who came from the pro wrestling world, and their dedication is cr- crazy. The thing that they told me that I didn't really think about until, you know, I spoke to them about it was that, you know, you can watch something like a SummerSlam or WrestleMania or something, you know, and then watch it for a few hours and think like, wow, they really have to go hard for that whole event. But then, you know, you realize like they're touring around the country doing that event, like essentially the same show, like 8 times a week, you know, it's one of the issues. I'm sure there's tons of documentaries about it you can watch, but you know, when it points to, you know, kind of like taking pain medication or something to get over those things, because it's just taking such a toll on someone's body. And you know, and their emotional state. I mean, that stuff's not easy. And even just like repeated subconcussive trauma to the head is a lot. Like that adds up. You brought up CTE earlier, and that's something that, you know, eventually, like later on in life, is you know, definitely a dangerous thing. Even if you're not getting concussed and knocked out, you're still getting your head rattled, your brain still taking, you know, kind of minimal amounts of damage or smaller amounts of damage over a longer period of time. And that adds up, you know, like everything, you know, that you put your body through, it eventually adds up. And, you know, hopefully it doesn't catch up to everyone in the worst way, but yeah, if people have to be really conscious about that. I think pro wrestlers definitely go super, super hard, very, very hard. And they do it all week long, which is astonishing to me.
So if we're staying on the subject, what to you personally, and plus that, you know, you're in the business now, so you know what the ins and outs, what is the ultimate stunt movie for you? Like, what movie do you look to, maybe as a kid or as a teenager, or even now that you saw or you always watched, and you're like, that is, if I could have been on that film set.
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple, and they all sort of like fit in the different pockets.
Home Alone, right?
Oh, man. Well, first of all, if I'd worked on Home Alone, I would probably be in some kind of like mansion by now. I'd be so, I'm just literally like a walking legend, but, for me, I would say a really, really big one, big influence on me too, is John Woo's Hard Boiled. I think Hard Boiled with Chow Yun-fat is one of the greatest action movies of all time. I don't know if you guys have like studied that one intensely, but he at some point is shooting a motorcycle that goes towards him on fire, and he jumps over it to shoot another motorcycle on fire, and then dives out of the way. It's crazy. There's a long, the third act scene, the finale in the hospital, is just, it's meant to be a gigantic oneer. And it's at a time before, you know, we did a long winter in Extraction, and a lot of that is done with, you know, clever wipes and some VFX covering it. And they didn't have the chance to do that back then. They're, you know, they're filming on these gigantic film cameras. And so, you know, if something goes wrong, there's all these explosions, these squibs, there's no computers making these things happen. It's all real and organic. And if something goes wrong, like 10 minutes in, it's like, okay, we'll be back here in like 2 days once we've set everything back up again to make another pass at it. That's obnoxious to me, you know. And then there's
so much cool stuff in there. It's shot so well, and it informed a lot of action cinema that we've done in the West since, you know.
We've been pretty slow to the action sequences that have been done across the world from us for, I mean, I feel like in the 2000s we were trying to play catch up.
Oh, and you mentioned too, I think that like not to interrupt, but I think that like when you mentioned the one shots and the Eastern influence of, I mean, I see that in Logan, I see that in the Daredevil, the stairwell and the hallway, you know, you get a little bit of that taste in those, you know, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. I think the obviously, you know, there was a cult phenomenon of like, you know, people who were into martial arts movies and stuff, especially into like Hong Kong cinema or like Japanese cinema, you know, in America, like back in the you know, 70s and 80s and everything, you know, they were a big fans of it, but there weren't any real filmmakers that were pushing that forward as much, I think. And it wasn't until, you know, like you have like the proliferation of Jackie Chan movies coming over in the 90s. And then also, you know, The Matrix clearly took it to another level. You know, the Matrix is so much of like Hong Kong and anime wrapped up into this cool sci-fi movie that no one thought was going to be as good as it was when it came out, and it changed everything. I think The Matrix changed so much, you know, to the point where, you know, like Shrek and Charlie's Angels were doing like parodies of the bullet time and stuff afterwards. You know, it became almost like a meme, but it's also, that movie was so instrumental in changing how we thought of action cinematography just in general. And it was one of the things that pushed fight scenes to become so much more important than they had ever been before. You know, we expected a higher class of fight scene. You know, after Yuen Woo-ping came over for The Matrix, you see a lot more movies trying to emulate that style. You know, there's a lot more beats of choreography within these shots without breaking the cuts, you know. And it wasn't until like The Bourne Identity that we started getting into the whole like close-up sort of long lens shaky sort of thing. But you know, it's like there's also the influence of things like the Blues Brothers, such a fantastic action movie. When you think about it, that big car chase scene at the end is just phenomenal. You know, stuff like The French Connection. There's so many great movies. Any of the James Bond movies are huge. You know, our influence to make action kind of comes from this singularity of being able to access all of these great movies and TVs and, you know, shows in history, you know, and sort of pick and choose the best spots of them. And you know, I think nothing is sort of created in a vacuum. I think everything takes inspiration from something else, you know, and that's why, like, looking back at a movie like Hard Boiled, it's still, you know, the fact that it still holds up now, even though we've sort of replicated it a million times, it's like, that means there's something special about it. You know, a movie like Terminator 2, there's something special about it. You know, that's, those sequences just live on in your memory, and they sort of just never go away. And that's for a reason, you know? So yeah, definitely a big fan of a lot of those things for various reasons, you know?
Yeah. I'm kind of curious. So, you know, we've talked about like a lot of, you know, your influences, and we talked about, you know, you're getting into the business. But I'm curious about some of the specific pieces of, you know, movies that you worked on and, you know, some stories behind it. One that I'm very interested in is Logan. You know, I think that Logan definitely changed the genre of in late in the game for the superhero movie. It kind of said, yes, we have a superhero, but we're going to do things in a different way. We're gonna look at it in, you know, in a Western. And you know, we all know that Westerns are heavily influenced from movies from China and from Japan. And I think that, you know, what fun stories or what insights do you have from working on that?
Yeah, Logan was one of the bigger jobs that I'd done at that point in time. we started in 2016. I got brought on by my two friends, Steve Brown, who's the fight coordinator, and then Manny Manzanares, who was one of the core team members, helped shoot a lot of the previs. You know, both guys, very big influences on me as a performer, you know, guys that pushed me really hard. I take one of my favorite wrecks in that movie, which is sort of at the end of it. It's in the, so I'm in the beginning. I'm one of the thugs in the beginning that's trying to jack his limo. You can see my face. It's pretty obvious. I'm wearing a hoodie. But I take the claw right up through the head, and it's really fun. But at the end of the film, we did a wreck that we had done a bajillion times in rehearsal. It was like the one gag, I think, that started like on day one of concepts in like January of that year. We had tested it out and tried it, and then it survived all the way until like we shot it in like July or something that same year, which is, you can find it on my Instagram page. It's at the end of when Logan injects himself and he comes running through and barrels for everybody. He climbs up on me, spins around me, and slams my head into the ground, and then stabs me in the neck. And it's like, man, that hit is so.
I love the fact that it's like, that's for me, it was like one of my favorite stunts that I've done, just because it was undeniably like a hard hit. It was just a hard hit, you know. And there's almost no way to fake that. You're gonna take your head straight to the ground, and we'll put some pads underneath you. We'll put some brush on the top of that pad so it kind of disguises it. But in the end, you know, you're getting your dome slammed into the floor. You know, we didn't have to do, I think we only did like two takes on the day, you know, because Steve Brown, who was doubling for Logan on that job, you know, we just done it before like a bunch of times, and we just had it down to science. So the moment we stepped up to the plate, it was super easy. You know, he looked at me and he said something like, I'm going to butter your bread. And I was all like, come get some. And we just nailed it on like the first take. They're like, let's do another one, you know, for safety. We nailed that one too. And then we moved on. It was, you know, super easy and super swift. But that movie go ahead.
That was a nice wide shot too. Like yeah, when they did like that, when they back. Showed you flipping, that was like one of the nicest wide shots, because you see everything. You see him flip, stabbing, flipping, and slamming you down
straight into the ground right in front of camera. Yeah, it was dope. The
that movie was not easy, because it was very physically taxing. You know, we put a lot into that one. I remember I was one of the guys that just me and a friend of mine and I, like, we got brought on the core team for the prep of it, and we were basically the two guys that just did, excuse me, all of like a bunch of wrecks, just all these concepts, just wreck, 4 weeks straight of that. And it was not easy. You know, there were times when I wake up and I'd be like, oh god, I gotta take like a hot shower before I can even just go get breakfast. Like, you just gotta soak for like an hour before you can walk down the hall. But I think it all lives on the screen. I think, you know, when you look at that film and you see all the cool stuff that's in there,
it changed the game for a little bit, you know. And one, it proved, even though we'd had movies like Blade and stuff, you know, like, you know, R-rated action films before, like for comics, you know, it sort of proved that you could take this big, you know, like the X-Men was like a big franchise that wasn't really known for being super gory or anything or super adult. You know, it made it much, much darker and much grittier, and with a well-known character. You know, and for me, it was a chance to work with, you know, Hugh Jackman, who is one of my like idols. You know, that's someone that I remember, like when we were in theater school, like that, you know, he's in textbooks performing like a song from Oklahoma. And like, I remember seeing that picture in the book, and, you know, since, you know, the first time that he played Wolverine, you're sitting there thinking like, man, it would be so cool to someday meet that guy or work on this movie, you know, on that series. And then all of a sudden you're there with the man, like with Wolverine himself, putting his claws like into your neck. You know, like, this is like a fantasy? Did I like wake up in a dream world? Like, this is so crazy, you know? And he's super nice and super cool and very professional. And, you know, like, he'll remember everyone's name and he just treats you really well. It's like, he's just one of those performers that you feel like you're a better person for just having been around him for a little while. And it was great to confirm that one of your heroes is deserving of that. And then also, you know, live up to this gigantic legacy of this character. You know, I've been fans of,
like, a fan of the X-Men since I was a child. You know, we all watch the cartoon and stuff, and Wolverine was always our favorite. And, you know, we play as him in video games and stuff. And all of a sudden you're literally looking at him in front of you, and it's surreal. You know, you just feel blessed in those sorts of moments.
I don't know about that. Cyclops was mine because Cyclops was kind of a dick. So.
Cyclops is cool, dude. I mean, yeah. Like, I did play as him in the whole, like, X-Men versus Street Fighter game.
You know, he had, like, the best super move. He just optic blasted the daylights out of the whole screen.
Yeah.
So I was always a Spider-Man in that one. I just feel like, you know, Spider-Man-Hulk combo was my tag team in that one.
How else would you feel if somebody just came in and started moving in on your girl? I mean, you had every right to be a dick.
That's true. That's true. I mean, I can't speak for his personality. But it also, like, I feel like this is a huge nerd thing too, but I guess, like, the cinematic version of Logan and Wolverine is pretty, I think, not entirely the same as in the comics too, you know. Just
had to make him more of a leading man anyway. And before he was like, well, he's like 4 foot something also.
He's like 4'11", I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool too.
Jackman is not 4'11". He's a big, massive muscle guy. So.
Well, it's cool too because it's 2017 when Logan comes out. And I mean, I know that I'm a little younger than Ben. I give him crap for that. You know, sometimes we talk about years. But I mean, 2017, when X-Men comes out and we see Jackman as Wolverine for the first time, that's about, wasn't that 98, I think, 99? I mean, you're looking at almost 20.
Yeah, it's like 2000, 15, I think.
Yeah, like 15, 20 like years. And yeah. It's kind of being like, I'm sure when that first came out, where you're what, middle school, you know, and then getting to work with him, that's just got to be awesome. That's just got to be so cool.
Yeah, it's sort of a legacy thing, you know. That's maybe the coolest thing. I mean, we talk about this a lot. I talk about this with, you know, my friends a lot of the time, which is, you know, I would have never guessed growing up that I would somehow find myself in front of these people. Like, you know, it is surreal, you know, like to literally be. There's a moment we were shooting scene, the limo fight, and that happened at the beginning of that movie. And there's a part where we're stomping him down and we're like putting our feet on the back of his shoulders and stuff. And it's, you know, Hugh Jackman face down in the
dirt, you know, and he's listening to James Mangold give him direction. You know, he's just like, you know, being very nice and very normal. He's Hugh Jackman, he's being polite and stuff, listening to the notes, taking it all in.
And then they get the, you know, pictures up, cameras starts to roll. And then you see him get into character. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, it's very apparent now. The Wolverine is like right in front of me. Like, I'm stepping on him right now. And even as like a stunt guy trying to play,
I'm a thug and I don't care and I'm going to beat this guy up. Me as Mike, you know, I'm sitting there going like, I'm kind of terrified.
Like, it's just the weirdest thing. You're literally looking at like a real life superhero appearing before your eyes. I'm like, guys, we should just leave. He's going to claw us to death. You know what I mean? So it's crazy, you know.
Like, Jean Valjean's about to kick my ass. This is pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Is.
He's gonna kick your ass, and then he's gonna sing Oklahoma. Let me ask you probably the most important question you'll answer on this entire podcast. Marvel has got the X-Men back. Who now takes over the claws of Wolverine? Gosh. Hugh Jackman said he's done. Who takes over?
That's a really tough one. It's so weird because I would assume it would be someone that's like already, like I would point to someone like a Chris Hemsworth or something, but he's like already Thor clearly. Gosh, that's a really tough one. I don't know how that works without, because I don't know how you leave behind what Hugh Jackman's done. I think whoever comes next is going to be fighting that urge to compare him to that person, like, you know, all the time. So I would have to think about it more in terms of like looking at it from the lens of someone who's not trying to be just an imitation of Hugh Jackman's version of it, like who can bring something different to it. And I think it would have to probably be someone who's relatively unknown, like someone that we may not
like before.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you think about it, like Daniel Craig being the new Bond, you know, how do you surpass someone, you know, in any of the Bonds? You know, they've had that issue many times. And it's almost like you have to get someone that you don't really see coming, you know? That's a good question. I'm so sorry that I don't have a good answer for it.
I've always thought my favorite kind of, you know, fan casting of that was Taron Egerton. I thought that a lot of people had thrown him around. He's a little more well known, especially now after Rocket Man and, you know, the Golden Circle, I think the Kingsman, you know, those kinds of movies. They're not that far away. You know, he's still fairly new in the whole scene, but he's got the look, I think, that potentially could be Wolverine. But I completely agree. You need somebody fairly new because, I mean, otherwise, you know, it's tough.
I would almost love someone like a Tom Hardy or someone who I think would be really good at it, but he's Venom, you know? So it's like they've snatched up so many of these great actors, you know, to already play like characters in that universe. So
yeah.
Like
it's just going to be, it's all going to come down to where they place Wolverine and the X-Men in the timeline. Is he a little older? Is he middle-aged?
Right.
Somebody like Tom Hardy would work, but he's going to be, you know, in his 30s or 40s as far as a look, as opposed to somebody who could pull off a younger one. But Ben, who do you think?
I'm still holding out hope that they drive a dump truck of money up to Hugh Jackman's house and Ryan Reynolds somehow talks into coming in back for one or two more times for the third Deadpool. They banter too much with each other on social media. I have a slimmer of a hope.
Yeah, they're so good at that. They slimmer set that up of nicely.
So, Mike, yeah. I got to ask, we've actually got a couple friends of the podcast who are huge Fast and Furious movie fans. And I saw that Ben's not a fan. But if they were to find out that you'd done some stunt doubling for Han, who is one of their favorite characters, or you will have, I think I said with F9, they're in post-production. So, you know, what are you able to tell us about that? Because, you know, I think that's awesome that, you know, that I think I saw that this is the first time that you've done the work with that franchise. But coming in, like, what got you into working with them? And, you know, what stories could you tell us about working on F9?
Yeah, actually, it's actually my second time working on the franchise. I almost forget about it sometimes, too. I did do some action for Fate of the Furious.
Okay.
It was funny because that was shooting at around the same time we did Logan. And I had to leave Logan to do Fate of the Furious for like 2 weeks, and then went back to Logan for 2 weeks, and then I actually went and did Iron Fist for 2 weeks immediately afterwards. It was like the craziest jumping around like summer. I got onto F9 as the co-fight coordinator because a buddy of mine, Justin Yu, and then his sort of mentor, one of his big mentors, JJ Perry, who's also a mentor of mine, had asked me to come on and for that job. They had also made Fate of the Furious together. And JJ Perry is one of the biggest stunt coordinators, second unit directors in the industry living today. Justin Yu, 8711 team member, he actually stunt coordinated the very first feature that I worked in, like where I went on a full run. We were doing a movie over in India, and he had to run a lot of the scenes. He had to come in to stunt coordinate on that. And yeah, it was wild. Very, very good close friends of mine. So when they asked me to do that, it was actually coming off of Extraction. I was maybe like a week or two left of Extraction, and they asked me if I could take a look at the script and if I'd be willing to come out and work with them. And obviously, massive opportunity. You know, it's a huge franchise. We were in London for 6 months last year, and it was crazy. That movie's supposed to actually be out already, but the quarantine has doomed it to a delayed release. Yeah, that was wild. I mean, being in Europe for that amount of time and working on such a big franchise, it's wild because you see how big movies can really get. Obviously, you know, like I've worked on some big movies before, but just something that is that much scale, that the scope of Fast 9 is so beyond what I'd sort of seen before in terms of films. Even something like Extraction, which had a ton of action, was very, very focused in terms of its storyline and, like, you know, the location that it's in. It's very much like in one sort of area, and it kind of pushes through that same area, and, you know, we just walk along the line. But, you know, F9, it goes all over the place, you know, in different parts of the world. There's like such a huge ensemble cast of people, you know, and you're doing such all these different concepts. I can't say too much about it because obviously the movie still, you know, hasn't been released yet. But they did reveal that Han comes back. It's on my IMDb that I got to stunt double him for some small bits. But that's also a thing where you're sort of meeting one of your heroes, you know, because like growing up as an Asian American, you know, male, like trying to get into acting. I mean, you look at someone like him and you're like, gosh, wait, I think all of us, when we saw Tokyo Drift, we were like, I just want to be that guy someday. You know, he's so cool.
It might've been the only good part about Tokyo Drift.
Oh man, he's phenomenal. He's super nice guy, really, really hard worker, very focused, and just can just dial that performance in so fast. It's like wild how fast he is at just making that stuff look so good on camera. He just knows he just knows himself really well. It's super inspiring to me, just
having looked up to him for a long time, to work with him and sort of see that, you know, again, like, you know, when you have like your role models, I always say never to meet your heroes, because they'll disappoint you.
I've met so many of my heroes and just
been completely amazed by how much they surpass my expectations. So
that's a good example of that. And yeah, that was a wild show. It hopefully when it comes out, it looks super cool. I when I saw the trailer
last, was it January when it came out, the right before the Super Bowl,
I mean, I was jumping up and down in my hotel room. You know, we were out in Atlanta like working on another film, and I was just going nuts because I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I've worked on this movie, because I thought the trailer looked super cool. You know, I just love insanely cool stunts, and that movie looks like it's gotten no shortage of it.
And you mentioned too, so the quarantine has put F9 behind, but also too, another movie that you worked on, Mulan, that's been pushed back. And that Mulan is kind of in Black Widow and Tenet are kind of in a stalemate to see who's going to do something first, to see when I think all three of those release. But what was it like working like on a Disney movie that, you know, in a sense of, because Mulan has got, it's one of those movies that from the conception of a live action, everybody had some, I don't know if concerns is the right word, but they had questions about how are they going to portray the culture, how are they going to portray the storyline. And I know that really it's kind of one of those weird blended movies where you get a little bit of you get more of the actual story than you do the Disney remake or the Disney original, the animated. So with that kind of being in play, like, what was it working for a Disney movie? Like, what was the high point of that?
It's so crazy. I actually came back from Fast 9, and then that same, I think it was like literally like the next day, I went to go work on Mulan. And we were doing reshoots here in Los Angeles. So I wasn't part of the actual main production that was happening over New Zealand. We had some reshoot scenes that we did over 3 weeks. And that was super cool. I mean, for me, it was sort of like, I just came in, I got the chance to double one of the actors for a bit, and then also do some nondescript, just background kung fu fighting in some, you know, cool armor. And it was one of those things where it was just business as usual. You come in, you do your stunts, learn the choreography, help train the actors and rehearse them, and then you just do your job. And, you know, it had been me becoming a performer again after having spent, you know, about the last year and a half of being a fight coordinator and kind of being more in charge of a lot of stuff, getting the chance to go back to just literally being only a performer. And for me, that was a lot of fun. You know, I was also working with a lot of my buddies, a lot of guys that came from the independent sort of fight community in the stunt world out here. So we were goofing around, like laughing and stuff, just having tons of fun with each other. And it was also what I thought was really cool about that movie. I'm not sure how much of it, I haven't really kept up on the info on it, but they may have made a big deal about it or not. But I thought it was really super cool that a lot of the major department heads in that film were all women. You know, when we came back and did the reshoots, the fight coordinator on it
was a woman, you know, Heidi Moneymaker, who was running the reshoots as the fight coordinator. She was you know, someone that I've looked up to for a very, very long time as well. And, you know, it's just been a cool mentor to me as well. I was really stoked about the fact that
important to point out to that is that, like, of all Asian casts, I mean, you guys, they didn't Matt Damon it and be like, let's stick this white dude in there and be like, you know, amongst all these other people that look nothing like him. Like, they stuck true to, you know, I think Hollywood's starting to become, I don't want to use this phrase, but more woke to what type of casting that they do based on what the story is supposed to be telling.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where, I mean, how else can you really do it? You know, if you're going to do Mulan, you sort of have to just, put the bullet in the gun and fire it and just say, like, look, this is a movie about Asian culture. Really bring that to the forefront. Like, don't try to shy away from it. You know, otherwise, then it's going to look weird. You know, then it would look like you're somehow, like, changing things just to make it more palatable in a way that's not really politically correct. And, you know, it's sort of like everyone sort of knows the right thing to do. And if you don't do that, then, like, what's going on here? You know, it's Mulan, of course. So it's like, how are you not going to pull that cast in and make it, you know, a sort of a celebration of, like, Asian culture? You know, I think that's one of their big opportunities to, you know, take that step. So, you know, yeah, I feel like sometimes, like, woke can be that word that, you know, you might be referring to it. It's like, it kind of gets, you know, overplayed sometimes, you know, or people just, you know, use it just to throw it out there. But I feel like that's the world we're in, where we have to make these big swinging steps and, you know, let the chips fall where they may. You know, if people have an issue with the way that movie is cast, and it's like, what did you expect? You know what I mean? It's going to be what it's going to be. And I feel like they did the right choice on that. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I come from a strange place as an Asian American male, because I was actually adopted. So both my parents are white. They're both from, you know, the Midwest, from Illinois. And, you know, I was more or less raised without really a strong sense of Asian culture. You know, within me, I didn't really get that until I was like a teenager. And for me, just the fact that, you know, I'm seeing a lot of people sort of just speaking English, but they're all Asians. And then they're in this movie with all Asians, but they're not trying to, like, subtitle them, and they're not trying to give them, like, a weird accent or something. You know, I remember going to auditions, you know, in Los Angeles at the, you know, beginning of my acting career out here, and going into them, they have to tell you, okay, you know, but can you give it, like, more of an accent? I was like, right, I don't have one. Like, I have a Midwestern drawl, like, sometimes if I, you know, I have enough beers and stuff, but, you know, I don't really have, like, an Asian accent. And so it was weird to go into so many auditions where they sort of expected you to do that. And I was like, well, is that part of the character, or is it just because you don't want them to have a normal American accent? You know, and
what do you think I'm supposed to sound like?
Yeah, I mean, and that I feel like, obviously, I haven't really been, like, acting since 2013, like I said, but I feel like that's not as much of an expectation anymore. I feel like we're pretty good about sort of trying to move away from that stereotype, you know, as much as we can. So I think that's headed in the right direction. Obviously, there's you know, a lot of growth as far as diversity goes, and, you know, things that we can do and take these big steps. But, you know, that's something that I see as being, like, in our benefit, that we're not doing those sorts of things on camera anymore. And I think Mulan's a good example of that. Like, you know, you're just letting them speak how they speak, you know?
So. Well, that's awesome. I'm trying to think. I'm looking through some of the questions. I think you've answered most of them, which this has been fantastic. You know, I got to say, Mike, this is the first time. This is kind of a reboot of sorts. The first podcast that I did ran 80 episodes, and it was just go watch a movie, wow. Come talk about the movie. And it was a lot of fun. You know, it was from about 2017 to 2019. And then, you know, life happened and we took some steps away from it. But never have we had something like this. You know, it's been an awesome opportunity. I'm really happy you took the time out, because it's just, not only is it cool for the show to get to do something different, but it's cool to hear about some of the, you know, the inside information of, you know, what it's like to get in and yes, you know, seeing Hugh Jackman get into the mindset of Wolverine is as cool as one would think. And so, but yeah, it's been a great time. Thank you for coming on. You know, is there anything, what are you working on right now? Yeah.
Ben, is that what you're going to say? You're going to ask about that? We're sort of on hiatus right now. We were shooting a film called Samaritan. You can find details on it on the IMDb and stuff. It's up there. But we were shooting that until, like, you know, March. And then, you know, we had like a month and a half to go. And we got sent back
back to home, wherever that was. You know, for me, it's Los Angeles. And so we've been kind of waiting until, you know, we know we're going to go back and we're going to shoot it. But, it, you know, obviously it sort of real depends on how COVID is affecting the industry and what's safe and what's going to be appropriate. And those timetables have to change and flux around that.
So we're sort of waiting to go back into that, but you know, that's going to be a cool film. Sylvester Stallone, that should be, you know, it was going so, you know, really good so far. I was having a lot of fun out there. So, hopefully we'll get back to Atlanta, soonish, you know, as soon as it's safe and we can start shooting on that thing again. I'm really interested to see how that all turns out. Cause, I can't say too much about it obviously, cause it's still shooting, but I think our action in it, the, especially the finale of the film, I think is going to be pretty fun to shoot. I'm looking forward to having a fun time on that one. So.
Other than that, just mainly just keeping myself sane and then trying to work on, you know, personal projects. I think most of us in the indie community also not just, you know, don't try to just find work, but we also try to like kind of make our own opportunities too and like learn and experiment and stuff. And you know, a large part of what I do as a
fight coordinator is, you know, shooting like previs and things like that.
And you are sort of like shooting segments of the movie as you would sort of want to visualize them for the most part, trying to meet the director's vision and make that come true. That is to a degree, you know, filmmaking on its own. So, you know, I fancy myself an independent filmmaker. I like trying to make stuff on my own. And we got a few things that are working in the middle of it right now that we're trying to get done and finalize post-production on. So hopefully we can have some of those things to show too. Just some of our own little fun passion projects whenever we get the chance to push them out there. Hopefully we'll be able to do that before we get back to working and get too busy again. So that's about
it. Yeah, an important question here, Mike.
Yeah.
Have you seen Bird Box?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a virus pandemic movie in your idea?
Is it a virus pandemic movie in my idea?
Yeah.
Man, now I'm trying to remember what that movie is about. I just remember that they're sailing down the river. Blind. It's almost more like aliens or something, right? Or it's like spirits. Like it's like these kinds of things that are out there. And I feel like that could totally, well, now you start arguing about like, or debating like sort of is mental illness, like something that can be affected from an exterior, you know, external source and et cetera. And I choose
almost
to think
like
of
you're possessed, like, right? Like it's almost
don't
like,
sway. Yeah, don't try and sway him. leave it as it is.
I guess it would depend on if you trust the sort of protagonist that you're following a lot more, like how subjective is that point of view that you're seeing of your hero and like their journey. I personally feel like I kind of take it in a more fundamentalist point of view, and I'm just like, yeah, there's like these alien spirits or whatever, and they're out there, and then they're just like, you know, just like possessing people or driving them nuts, driving them to insanity. It reminds me a lot of, you know what it is, it's ultimately it's like a cosmic horror film, right? Because you don't really understand what's out there. It's sort of in that Cthulhu realm of something like a color out of space or whatever, where, you know, what are they seeing that's driving him to this madness? You don't really ever know, and the point of it is that you're not really supposed to ever know too much. And
pretty sure this part will be edited out.
Like whatever Mike said was terrible, just cut it off there. Well, still had some good thoughts in his head.
He didn't agree with Aaron's point of view, so yeah, he's gonna get edited out on that one.
It's okay, he can do it. We have the same birthday, so
yeah, that's the other weird trivia thing about us. That's the most that I talk to Ben also, is that we have the exact same birthday, so we're constantly like,
whenever it's our birthdays, we always hit each other up about it. That's like it's one of the few things that like lived on from our old college days. You know, there's just that sort of joke of, hey, I remember that thing. We should always make it a tradition to say happy birthday to each other on those days. Yeah. I guess awesome. He has some leeway. He can sort of like do whatever he wants with the footage. I mean, it's your podcast. What you want? I'm just an idiot.
Mike, where can people find more information about you on social media?
Just go to my Instagram or go to my Facebook. Just add me or whatever.
Instagram would be Art of Legitsu,
LEGITSU. You just look up my name, Mike Valeri. I'm one of like, I don't know, two or three people with that name apparently on Instagram. I don't know. But yeah, and then just anytime you ever want to hit me up on, you know, Instagram or on Facebook or whatever. I'm not doing too much these days except for browsing my phone. So
as we all are.
Answer questions.
Absolutely. Go watch Extraction. It's still on Netflix and it's really, 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 really good.
Yeah, everyone turn it on, like at the end of the night when you go to bed, just turn it on and like put it on repeat. Just kind of like put it, you know, in your browser, so it just repeatedly plays it so that we can get more money out of it eventually. Drive the view count as high as you can.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, all right. Again, thank you, Mike, for coming on. This has been a lot of fun. We'll have to have you on as a guest host coming up on, you know, an upcoming, you know, we do different features. We do different profiles. We actually, last week's episode was, that will come out tomorrow, actually. That is Judd Apatow profile. So, awesome. Maybe at some point we'll do some action movies. We'll bring in your expert advice and your insights, and we'll bring you back on. You'll have you be a multiple time host here.
Oh, that'd be amazing. I just gush about whatever it is we're watching the entire time.
It's my favorite thing to do is just watch action movies and then just talk about them. So,
excellent. Everybody, if you want to follow the Drive-In podcast, you can go to Facebook and search Drive-In Double Feature, or on Twitter, you can follow us at DI Double Feature. Actually, we're not sure what we're doing next week, so just keep an eye out on social media for topics for that. We might take a break. I don't know. We might do two episodes. Who knows what's going on? Not me, as we get ready. Both Ben and I, as we get closer to going back to school. He's actually going to go back to school a little later than me, that jerk. But otherwise, until next time, everybody, I'm Aaron Lopez. He's Ben Norsworthy.
Ben Norsworthy. Drive Thank you, Mike.
Drive home safe, guys.
Thank you, guys.